Well, I know I said it earlier, but we truly are glad to see you here this morning. And we are actually getting back to our study through the life of Joseph here, our journey of Joseph. It's actually been 8 weeks since we've actually been in Joseph. So some of you may be kind of going, wait, where are we? You have to remember where we're at. So, all right, we're going to be in Genesis 42 today. But while you're turning to Genesis 42, I want to ask you something. Do you have any... Do you have anything you regret? All of a sudden, I'm regretting asking that question. You know, I mean, I really am, because you guys, you didn't respond quite the way I thought you would. I want you to think about this for a minute. Regrets typically fall in one of two categories, right? Either there was something that you wish you had done that you hadn't done, and you regret that, right? Or you did something that you really feel bad about, and that's a regret as well, right? Now, how many of you, honestly, you've got a regret of mine? Okay, yeah, we'll kind of be honest. How many of you is the former, it's something you regret not doing something? Okay, how many of you ever regret you regret doing something? Yeah, see, there were more hands on that second one, right? You know, we typically, I am a human. I learn through failure a lot. I think that's the way God wired me. Let's have him do something stupid. Woohoo, that's me right there. That's my life right there. Let's do something stupid and learn from that. It feels like that's the way we live our lives a lot of time. Now, let's set the story here. Let's remind ourselves what's been going on by the time we get to Genesis chapter 42. Joseph was, do you remember how many brothers he had? He's one of how many sons? 12 sons, okay? Now, 10 of his older brothers, let me back up a little bit. His dad is named Jacob, and Joseph was Jacob's favorite son. We're going to talk more about Jacob probably next week and look at some of the things that he's done. He's going to take our emphasis next week a little bit. But I want you to think about this here for a minute. Okay, so Joseph is Jacob's favorite son, and he made it totally blatantly obvious to everybody that, hey, this is my favorite kid. You other guys? No. Yeah, you're fine. I love you, but this is my favorite. This is the kid I love, right? So remember what 10 of his brothers did? They take him. They're going to kill him. Joseph is wearing his little coat that dad gave him, this fancy little coat. And they decide, you know what, let's kill him. But then they go, let's just throw him in this well. And they see this caravan passing of people going to Egypt. And they went, we can sell him. So they literally sold their brother into slavery, ripped up the coat, sprinkled a little goat's blood on it, and took it home to dad and said, oh, he got attacked by a wild animal, daddy. He's gone. And that's kind of what happened here. Joseph is 17 at the time that happens. So he goes, remember what happens? He actually ends up in the slavery employee of a guy named Potiphar. He gets falsely accused of raping Potiphar's wife, and he truly didn't. She's trying to seduce him, and he wants no part of it. So she gets mad, so she goes, he tried to rape me. And he ends up in jail for that. And then he ends up in jail for a lot longer than he had planned. We don't know how many years he's in jail, but we do know that he's esteemed himself and he's put in charge of prisoners and all this other kind of stuff. And there's a couple of prisoners he's over in Egypt, and a couple of Pharaoh's high up officials are in prison there. And we've talked about all this before, but he helps them out. He interprets dreams that they have. They take it back to Pharaoh and he said, remember me, get me out of here. And they forgot. The gentleman who was going to do that is forgotten. And he spends another 2 years in jail. Now, after 2 years, remember, Pharaoh has some disturbing dreams. Pharaoh is trying to figure out what those dreams mean, and everyone's like, we have no idea what those dreams mean. And this guy goes, oh, this cupbearer said, oh, you know what? There was a guy in prison that he interpreted my dreams. Oh, he'll be able to help you out. And so all of a sudden, Joseph, remember, he's been in prison for years. They shave him. They give him a bath. They get him all dressed up nice, and they quickly bring him into Pharaoh, and he interprets his dreams. Now, the dreams was going to be that there's going to be 7 years of famine. I mean, 7 years, let me back up. There's going to be 7 great years of huge harvest, followed by 7 years of famine. And Joseph, when Pharaoh hears about all that, he goes, well, what do we do? And Joseph said, well, you have 7 years. Store up all this grain. Do all this. You can just get through the 7 bad years if you'll just be smart in the 7 good years. So Pharaoh goes, that's a great idea. Why don't you head up that project? So Joseph, this guy that had been a prisoner in the morning, rotting away in jail where he's been for years, Now all of a sudden Pharaoh makes him his right-hand man, and he answers to nobody but Pharaoh. He is second in charge of the entire nation of Egypt, and he's 30 years old at this point. All right, are you with me on all that? Kind of helping there? All right, he's 30 years old. They go through the 7 good years, and Joseph is just, he's saving up grain, he's doing all that, he's being really smart. But then the 7 bad years hit. And that's where we are now. Now, today, I want to tell you, our emphasis isn't going to be so much on Joseph. And I'm telling you, I'm going to fail at this, but I'm going to try hard not to look at things from Joseph's perspective today. Because today, the emphasis is all on the brothers. It's all on those 10 guys that threw him in the well over 20 years before, that sold their brother into slavery. The emphasis is on them. So let's look here in verse 42, and let's talk about this here. Because here's the thing I want you to understand. These guys, for 20 years, have been carrying this secret of what they did. Dad doesn't know what they did. Their younger brother, Benjamin, probably doesn't know what they did. It's just these 10 guys that kind of know that. They have been carrying this guilt for over 20 years at this point. Over 20 years, probably it's been, you know, between 20 and 22 years at this point, they've been carrying that guilt here. Joseph is probably about 37, 39, somewhere in that frame when we pick up the story here today. So let's look at this. Let's look at the famine here. Let's look at the first 4 verses of chapter 42. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you keep looking at each other? Isn't that great?" You know, you ever hear a dad go, "Why are you guys acting like idiots just staring at each other?" That's what he basically says. He says, "Why do you keep looking at each other? Listen," he went on, "I've heard there's grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us so that we may live and not die." So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he thought something might happen to him. Now, the famine, we know this from the end of chapter 41, that this wasn't just a famine that hit just Egypt, but it hit everybody. It hit all over the place. And it hit Joseph's family there and where they're living. And so Jacob sends the brothers, these 10 brothers, go get grain from Egypt. I've heard that there's grain there. Everyone's talking about this. I mean, I kind of wonder, it's probably a couple of years into this famine at this point. Probably a year, maybe 2 years, something like that. Word's gotten around, oh, Egypt has got grain. Man, they've stored it up. They are ready for this. They can save you if you'll just kind of get to Egypt here. So Jacob, we'll talk about Jacob's response here in a little bit. But this drought has reached such a crisis level in Canaan that Jacob sends him to go to Egypt and be there. Now, we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but I'm telling you, this is not just a, hey, let's run to Walmart and go pick up some groceries here. This is about 250 to 300 miles away to Egypt, walking, carrying pack horses, doing all of that. For 200 and in the middle of a famine, which probably means lots of heat, no water. Now they're faced with this 250 to 300 mile journey, having to carry all the water that they're going to need. It probably took them at least 6 weeks, I would think, to actually kind of get there. This is a big journey and kind of a big deal here. So they end up doing so Jacob ends up sending 10 of the sons, but did you catch how he didn't send one of his sons? He wants to keep his favorite back home again. And so he doesn't send them back. He doesn't know, I think, what happened with Joseph. He's not aware of that. He thinks Joseph is dead. He has believed the story. But I think that there's just a little bit of mistrust of those other 10, just enough that he goes, you know what, I'm not going to send my favorite because I don't trust the other brothers. I think that probably stung him a little bit. I think that kind of stung their consciences here a little bit. But then we get to verse 5-8, and this is where the first face-to-face meeting is going to happen between Joseph and 10 of his brothers, and he's going to recognize them. So let's look here at verses 5-8 here and talk about the recognition here. The sons of Israel were among those who came to buy grain, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Verse 6, Joseph was in charge of the country. He sold grain to all of its people. His brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the ground. Now, I love this sentence right here, verse 7. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them. Now, I want to stop there for a minute. I think they walked in, and I think instantly Joseph goes, "Hey." You know, they look a little bit older, a little bit grayer, some more wrinkles and all that other kind of stuff. But I kind of wonder at what point did he kind of recognize. 10 of them walk in. We don't know. They probably didn't walk in any certain order. It was just whatever order they were in. And they kind of come in, and he sees the first person. He sees the second brother. He sees the third brother. I wonder how many brothers it took to where he went, "Those are my brothers. Dude, those are my brothers." He recognizes them. And you're going to see that that's mentioned twice here in the passage. He instantly recognizes them according to verse 7. Now, it says in verse 7, when he saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. "From the land of Canaan to buy food," they replied. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Now, I want you to picture this here for a minute. Now, we talked early on about how when he comes into the employ of Egypt, that they shave him, they dress him in Egyptian clothes. I mean, he looks like an Egyptian now. Joseph looks like one of those people. Now, all of a sudden, he sees these bearded Hebrews walk in, these 10 guys, and he goes, "Hey, that kind of looks like my brother, and that looks like my those are my brothers." He has the greatest poker face right here. He doesn't react. In fact, he treats them like strangers. And in fact, he doesn't just treat them like strangers. He treats them pretty harshly. We're going to talk about all that here in a little bit with what all that means. But I want you to understand here that for 20 years, he has pictured these guys. The last time he saw these guys, he was at the bottom of a well that they had thrown him in, and he is pleading with them not to sell him into slavery. He is pleading with them, "Just let me go." He is begging them, "Please don't do this to me." The last time he saw him, he was 17 years old and the youngest brother of all of them. Now he's probably about 37, 39 years old, probably somewhere roughly around there, and he's in this position of authority over them. And these guys have no idea that this is their brother that's in front of them. He's speaking through a translator. He looks like an Egyptian. He's answers to nobody but the Pharaoh, but the king. He doesn't answer to anybody. He's in charge of the entire kingdom. There's no way that they could ever think that that was their brother. There's no reason that they would ever think that. So let's kind of keep on going here for a minute, because I kind of picture this importance of what this means here. Because Joseph has all the authority over them. The last time he saw them, they were not exactly nice to him. So here's the question. Is Joseph just being mean to him when he treats him harshly? I mean, I've heard people come to me, they've said that. They go, "I don't understand how this man of God could just be so mean to his brothers." Now, I want you to think about this here for a minute. The last time he saw them, they were not exactly nice to him. They were selling him off into slavery. They were doing all that. Now, 20-plus years later, he's kind of going, have they changed? Are they the same people? Joseph brilliantly just comes up with this idea. We know that he's an idea man. Pharaoh saw it from the start, which is why Pharaoh wanted him to be in charge of the entire country. He goes, we have to find out if these guys are still the same jerks that they were. You know, I mean, are you with me on all that? And it was pretty smart of him to do that here. He's needing to know what's in their hearts. Are they the same callous group? Are they the same murderous group of 10 brothers that they were 20 years ago? Were they? Would they still hate him? If they realized who he was, are they still going to hate him? Would they resort to the exact same thing if their lives get pressured again? Would they sacrifice another to save their own skins? And so here's Joseph, and he's going, we need to know what's going on here. And he's kind of wondering about that. So he deals with them pretty harshly. Now, let's keep on going here, because now we get to the accusation that Joseph's going to make. He kind of comes up with this plan off the top of his head, and here's what he does. So look at verse 9 here. Joseph remembered his dreams about them, and he said to them, "You're spies. You've come to see the weakness of the land." "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food," they said. "We are all sons of one man. We are honest. Your servants are not spies." "No," he said to them, "you have come to see the weakness of the land." But they replied, "We, your servants, were 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no longer living." Now he gets this accusation here, and he's accusing them of being spies, right? He's saying, "Oh, you're just here to kind of scope out the land. You're just here to do all that." We know that these guys are not exactly nice guys. Even before they had sold them off into slavery, two of them were responsible for the genocide of an entire group of people. You can read about it back in Genesis 35. You can go back and see some of that. These guys were not exactly nice guys. One of them actually has had an incestuous relationship with his daughter-in-law. There's been all this other kind of stuff. If you feel like you have a dysfunctional family, you're in good company right here, all right? Joseph is right there with you. So he's accusing them of being spies. Notice here that it says in verse 9 that he remembered his dreams. Remember what his dreams are that caused them to want to kill him in the first place? That they would be bowing to him. The irony is lost on these guys that the very thing that they saw happening is happening right here. But Joseph, he remembers his dreams and he goes, you know, it wasn't just 10 brothers bowing to me, it was 11 brothers and my father and mom was there too. I mean, it was this picture of, it wasn't just him. He knows that his dad's going to be bowing before him. He knows his brother's going to be bowing before him. He knows what's going to happen here. He knows that this isn't the end of the time he's going to see with them. So he comes up with this accusation that they're spies. He kind of challenges them, and I kind of wonder, you know, the brothers are, I mean, I kind of wonder, picture you're one of these 10 here. He goes, you're spies. You're here to find out our weaknesses. You know, imagine, I mean, how do you respond to that? Do they kind of look at each other and go, say something? No, I don't know what to say. You say something. You know, that these brothers are just kind of scared. So Joseph presses them even further. Goes, no, you're spies. But then Joseph comes up with this test. We know that he's been unnerved with these accusations. So Joseph is going to test them here. Look at verse 14 again. We're going to go, well, not again. Let's look at verses 14 through 17 right now. And Joseph said to him, I have spoken, you are spies. This is how you'll be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one from among you to get your brother. The rest of you will be imprisoned so that your words can be tested to see if they are true. If they are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies. So Joseph imprisoned them together for 3 days. All right, so he gets this idea, right? He accuses them and he says, here's how you're going to be tested. Your youngest brother is going to have to come here and prove that your story is for real. And he actually has them imprisoned for 3 days. Now, I'll tell you, a lot of your translations there in verse 17 probably say imprisoned. That's actually not what the Hebrew says. It kind of says they're put under guard. When you talk about Joseph being in prison, it's a different Hebrew word that was used. That was an actual prison. Here they're just kind of under guard, but notice who they're with. They're imprisoned, but with who? Go back to verse 17. Read verse 17. Who are they imprisoned with? Each other, right? Now, I wonder what this conversation was like for 3 days. You know, could you imagine these guys for 3 days going, how do we get out of this mess? What do we do? How do we do this? You know, dad didn't send the youngest brother here because he's so scared that something bad's going to happen to him. Now, the only way we get out of here is if he comes to us. There's no way dad's going to allow that to happen. He'd rather the 10 of us die here than go there. I have a feeling that these 10 guys, for these 3 days, they're together, they're kind of talking, they're kind of feeding off of each other, and probably, you know, stress tends to bring out a little bit of anger and jerky attitude sometimes, you know. I imagine there were a few little scuffles between these guys, and guards were probably having to break it up. It's probably a lot of that that's going on. But after 3 days, they've had time to think through all this. They've had time to deal with everything that's going on. Joseph calls them back. Look here in verse 18 through 20. And on the third day, Joseph said to him, I fear God, do this and you will live. If you are honest, let one of you be confined to the guardhouse, while the rest of you go and take grain to relieve the hunger of your households. Bring your youngest brother to me so that your words can be confirmed. Then you won't die. And they consented to do this. Joseph, he's been brilliantly messing with them. I mean, he's been playing a mind game. He's had them in prison. He's really messing with his brothers. But he's doing this to test them. You kind of get that? He needs to see, are you the same jerks that threw me in the well here? Are you the same ones that thought so little of your own family that you're willing to do that? Now they're here to save their own family. Now he wants to know, are you here to save your family or are you just here to save yourself? What are you doing here? What's really going on? It's just this brilliant plan that he has here. And I don't want you to miss out on what actually happens here. Picture you're one of the brothers, one of these 10, okay? You've been there for 3 days. You've been in prison. They've been talking. They've been going, how do we get out of all this whole thing? And then after 3 days, this Egyptian calls you back in. And what does he say? What were those first three words I read and all that? What is that, verse 18? What does he say in verse 18? What does he fear? Check this out. Don't miss the irony here. These 10 Hebrews... These 10 Hebrews come all this way to a pagan land to get food. And after 3 days of imprisonment, the Egyptian that's over them says, hey, I fear Elohim. He said, I fear your God. Ironically, none of them had mentioned God up to this point, have they? Ironically, none of them are going, maybe we should pray about this. Maybe we should look for God's guidance. None of them have done anything like that. But yet they see this guy, unbeknownst to them, it's their brother, but all they know is that this is this Egyptian that has the ability to take their own lives if he so desires. And he's been threatening them. And he says, I fear God. Not just any God, he said, I fear Elohim. I fear your God. Now, how do you think those brothers are feeling? Now, all of a sudden, these brothers are going, you know, do you think they kind of see a little crack in the armor there? And they go, yeah, you fear God. Let us go. But I love the fact that the first time the brothers think about God in this passage that we're aware of is when Joseph mentions it to them, and they think he's just some nameless Egyptian ruler to them. They know nothing about him. And how ironic is it that these 10 have to be reminded that God's the important one here? So he says, I fear God, do this and you'll live. It's just this idea of, you guys know what dissonance is? You know, dissonance is just one of those fun things. I'm going to turn on the keyboard here, Chad, if you don't mind giving us some volume. You know, dissonance is a musical term. You hear all that horrible sound? Isn't that horrible? That's just horrible. I'm going to keep doing it. Just this. That's horrible, right? You take something like this. Well, that's pretty, right? That's a D and an F together. They're designed to go together. You play an E and an F together. That's called dissonance. It's grating on each other. I want you to catch the dissonance in this passage here. The Hebrews aren't the ones who bring up God. It's the Egyptian captor that brings up God to these brothers. That's dissonance. That's something that shouldn't be happening. That's that little grating that you go, something's not quite right here. And that's the picture of what's happening here. And in the brothers' minds, this Egyptian captor knows about their God, believes in their God, and fears their God. This is huge. And I have a feeling that this had an impact on them. So we actually, I want you to think through everything that these brothers have gone through over the last few days here. God is clearly working on them. Meanwhile, I love the fact that Joseph has probably been holed up in his room for 3 days just praying fervently for them, praying just hours at a time for his brothers and going, God, it is so good to see them. Help us to be able to make this right. Help us to be able to be a family again. Help us to be able to do all this. And I want you to see what happens here. Let's look and see what happens with their guilt here in verses 21 through 24. Remember, they all consented to the plan that he would keep one of them. The other 9 of them would go back home, and he would keep one of them there. So verse 21, now keep in mind, they are still in front of Joseph here. They're still in front of their brother, not knowing it's their brother. So verse 21 says, then they said to each other, obviously, we are being punished for what we did to our brother. We saw his deep distress when he pleaded with us, but we would not listen. This is why trouble has come to us. But Reuben replied, didn't I tell you not to harm the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must account for his blood. Now, all of a sudden, these guys are going, this is because of our own guilt. What we did 20 years ago that we've tried to hide, that we've tried to not deal with, what we've kept hidden for 20 years is coming back to haunt us now. And Joseph is still in the room. And look at verse 23 and 24. When they did not realize that Joseph understood them, since there was an interpreter between them. I mean, why would Joseph understand them? He's an Egyptian. He's been speaking Egyptian to them. I mean, he has no appearance at all of being a Hebrew. Not knowing that they grew up under the same roof, why in the world would they think that? He understands everything that they're saying to each other. So verse 24, look at Joseph's response here. He turned away from them and wept. When he turned back and spoke to them, he took Simeon from them and had him bound before their eyes. Let's keep reading. Joseph then gave orders to fill their containers with grain, return each man silver to his sack, and give them provisions for their journey. This order was carried out. They loaded their grain on their donkeys and left there. Now, I love the fact that after all of this time, their guilt begins to manifest in their lives. They began to feel guilty for what was going on. And this whole time, they've been talking to this Egyptian ruler through an interpreter. And I wonder what they thought when all of a sudden they start going, you know what, this is our brother, this is our own fault because we didn't care enough for our own brother that we let this happen, that we sold him into slavery. Now we have to account for his blood. This is God, the God that this Egyptian guy has just mentioned. He's getting back at us. This is his revenge on us for what we did. And I kind of wonder what they thought when they see this Egyptian ruler have to do this. Because he's crying. We're going to talk more about this in probably next week or maybe in 2 weeks about why Joseph is crying. But I mean, truly, I want you to understand, he doesn't like hurting his family. And this is an emotional thing for him to be able to hear his own brothers express their regret for what they've done to him. They'd probably never say it to his face, but they hear him. He gets to hear it right here, right? You know, brothers aren't ever going to admit when they're wrong to each other, right? It's just not going to happen. But I love the fact here that God has just been working so many ways in their lives here. And I want to take just a minute here, and I want to talk about the guilt of the brothers. They've finally reached a point where they said, obviously, we're being punished for what we did to our brother. We saw his deep distress when he pleaded with us, but we would not listen. This is why this trouble has come to us. Now, I want you to picture this for a minute. Not only do they say what we did was wrong, but do you actually see in verse 21 that they're actually remembering what happened? They remember him pleading. They remember the cries when he's down there in the well. They remember him going, please don't do this. They remember him just crying out. They remember all of that. And they've carried that guilt with them for 20 years and never wanted to deal with it. I asked you at the start of this whole thing about if there's anything that, any regrets that you have. And I want you guys to understand, guilt is a horrible, horrible thing to carry around. And I want us to see just the extent that God was willing to do to cause these brothers to feel some guilt. I want to talk about what God did to spur on their guilt. I think is how I put it on the screen. Yeah, to spur their conscience. There it is. Okay. Now, we see their conscience getting the best of them. I do want to talk about your conscience real quick. You know what your conscience is? You know, that little thing that tells you what you're doing that's right and wrong? Ironically, it's part of being built in the image of God is we have a conscience. We have those times where we go, ooh, that's not right. But then you always go, but I want to do it anyway. Right? But you always have that, ooh, I shouldn't do that, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, I mean, that's kind of your conscience talking to you. Now I want to tell you, your conscience doesn't make you right or wrong. It was 1 Corinthians 4:4, I believe, that says, my conscience may be clear, but that doesn't make me in the right. The whole point is you can't trust your feelings, but your conscience is always there to kind of go, hey, don't do that. Hey, that's wrong. And for 20 years, these guys have tried to ignore what they have done to their brother. For 20 years, they've tried to put it off. But I love that there's a few things that God kind of uses to bring them to a point where they go, hey, this is our fault. This is because of what we did to our brother. And the first is just simply this. The tough times they're going through. There's a famine going on, and they are hungry. Now, earlier on, I made a joke about how the dad's like, why do you keep looking at each other? Listen, there's food in Egypt. Go to Egypt. Go get food. I kind of wonder, isn't that kind of funny? Jacob's going, why are you guys acting like morons and not doing anything about this? There's food in Egypt. Why do you think they haven't even been talking about it? They haven't even been like, we need to go to Egypt. I want you to picture this here for a minute. You know, I think it's been this uncomfortable thing. They're going, hey, we sold our brother off in Egypt. Now Egypt has all this food. And you know, I think it's just this reminder. Does your guilt ever keep you from going somewhere because every time you go there, you feel guilty? Does it cause you to not think about things because you just feel guilty? Sometimes those are God's ways of trying to get our attention here. And not only was this a 250 to 300 mile trip, but I mean, it could take 6 weeks to get there and come back and do all that. But even once they arrived there, they couldn't be assured that they're going to have a good meeting there. They learned that the hard way when Joseph's treating him harshly and accusing him of being spies. And I think that all of this is kind of haunting them here a little bit. I have a quote from James Stocker. He was a Scottish pastor that died in the early 1900s. And I love what he said. He was talking about how your conscience bugs you more at certain times of day. Here's what he said. He said, conscience comes to us in lonely hours. It wakens us in the night. It stands at the side of the bed and says, "Come, wake up and listen to me." And there it holds us with its remorseless eye, and our buried sins rise out of the grave of the past. They march by in melancholy procession, and we lie in terror looking at them. Nobody knows but ourselves. The next morning, we go forth to business with a smiling face, but conscience has had its revenge. Wow. Some of you know this because you experienced this. Truth is, sometimes the hard times you're going through, it has a way of digging up your past, and along with that, it brings up all kinds of doubt, it brings up all kinds of fears that come along with this. But God used more than just the hard times to spur their conscience. He used being treated harshly. Now, here's the interesting part here from it. Joseph, who is the second in command, I mean, right under Pharaoh, he's in charge of the entire country, he didn't take part in every individual grain transaction. You know, that's not what happened. Not everybody who came to get grain would be ushered in front of Joseph. But he hears, I wonder if he heard about these 10 little Hebrews coming, and he said, "I want to meet them." Or if it was just one of these things where a large group of foreign people, he automatically said, "I want to meet with them because we want to make sure that they're not here trying to find our weaknesses and trying to take over and do all that." But I want you to understand that being treated harshly helped spur their consciousness on. This harsh treatment that they received helped them to go, you know what? It's not so nice being treated bad, right? Some of you have learned the hard way. You feel bad for treating someone else bad when someone treats you bad, right? Some of you are honest enough to go, yeah, that's happened to me. And some of you go, no, I'd never treat anybody bad. That would never happen. I want you to see something else that God used to work in their lives. He not only used the being treated harshly, he not only used just the famine itself and going through tough times, but he used their confinement. Now, for 3 days, they're confined together, and Joseph ends up spending years in prison. But I kind of wonder if they went, you know, hey, here we are against our own will. We don't want to be here. Maybe that was kind of like the way we treated our brother Joseph. I wonder how many of them began to have that thought. You know, the way that we feel now is probably the way our brother felt. And God begins to crack away at their walls that they build up, their walls that they put up saying, I don't want to deal with the bad things that I've done for 20 years. And God begins to use that to crack away. Now, what's interesting is at this point in the story is when they say, this is because of the blood that we've, I mean, this is because of our brother that we're doing all this. But I think something else that just was that final nail in the coffin. Did you catch all this a little bit later in the passage when he takes Simeon, the brother that's going to stay, and did you catch what he did? He has Simeon tied up right in front of them and carted off. Now, I want you to picture that. 10 brothers are sitting there. He goes, all right, one of you is going to stay here, and the other 9 are going to go get your youngest brother and come back. Right? Are you with me on all that? So he goes, okay, who's the one that's staying? And he goes to the next oldest, by the way. There's probably a whole other reason behind that I don't have time to get into. But he has them tied up right in front of them. You think that's going to mess with their heads a little bit? Yeah. And why is he doing it? Because these guys were willing to throw him in a well. They were going to actually kill him, but then they decided to sell him to make a buck off of it. We were so worried about, and why? Just because they were annoyed by him. They're so worried about what they wanted out of life that they didn't care what had happened to him. Now, the stage is set. Are they still that way? Are they going to run and take the grain that they're going to give them and not ever come back, and who cares what happens to their brother that's here? Or are they changed? I think he ties up Simeon in front of them just to give them every chance to have that image in their mind and go, we've got to come back with Benjamin. We have to come back with our youngest brother. We've got to take care of our family. We've got to do the right thing here. You kind of catch all this? It's not always the most fun story to look at this part of it, but it's pretty amazing how God works in this incredible story. But here's the thing that I want you to get. These brothers had done something horrible over 20 years ago, probably about 22 years ago at this point. They thought it was all behind them. It wasn't for God. And God used some pretty amazing things to bring that up to their minds. Here's another thing that I want you to understand here for just a minute. The story of Joseph is one about how you're not defined by the past things that have happened to you. You're not even defined by the things that you've done in the past. You get to be someone who lives in grace and mercy and in joy every single day. These brothers are going to learn an incredible lesson, and their life is about to get better than they could ever imagine it could ever be. But they had to be broken first. They had to reach a point where they're saying, we've done something wrong. And it took this Hebrew ruler, who incidentally happened to be their brother, talking about God, talking about the amazing things that they've done, for them to go, yeah, we've done wrong. God, forgive us. We're sorry. Make us better men. Make us better family. Make us just better people in general. Use us. It's a pretty amazing story, and the next few chapters are just such an incredible thing. I wish we could just take time to look at it all in one time, but we don't want to have like a six-hour-long sermon. You know, I don't want to have a six-hour-long sermon. Where the story goes from here is pretty amazing, and we're going to pick this up a little bit next week as we kind of shift the focus from the brothers, as we shift the focus to the dad, and we talk about Jacob a little bit next week. So, but just remember this, okay? Those times where you feel that little thing going, hey, God wants something better for you than the things that you're doing. You need to listen to that little voice. Sometimes that voice is the Holy Spirit going, hey, God wants something so much better for you than this. It took some tough times for these guys to reach this point. Don't be like them. Don't be like them. Let's have a word of prayer. God, we thank you for how you work in our lives. We thank you that you love us so much that you were willing to send your son to die on a cross for us. All the sins, all the bad things that we do, were taken on by Jesus, and we're so grateful for that. Thank you for providing a way that we can have a relationship with you. Work in our lives. Work through our consciousness. Help us not to harden ourselves to hearing you speak to us. Help us to be open to the Holy Spirit every minute of every single day. For your name we pray. Amen.